The world was stunned today by the death of Diego Ricardo, the youngest person on the planet. The youngest person on Earth was 18 years, 4 months, 20 days, 16 hours, and 8 minutes old.
Hi, I'm Kat.
And I'm Mel.
And this is Verbal Diarrhea.
Our third show.
Wow, we made it to number 3.
Well, what are you going to sing if we make it to number 10?
I might do a rock song.
Well, I thought you were going to say I might do a rap, and I was like,
me and rap don't work.
Yeah, apparently. Oh. Well, anyway, welcome to our third show, and we're happy that we're still around. And,
we've
been getting some really positive feedback.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone seems to be liking our wonderful banter.
We're not bantering. We're serious, damn it. We're serious here. Oh, speaking of the damn it, one of our listeners was nice enough to point out that we're a little bit explicit.
Just a bit, even though
he likes it, but...
We just tend to swear a bit fucking too much.
Well, you don't swear. When you swear, it just sounds like you're trying to swear, and...
Apparently I can't swear very well.
No, so it's not very convincing.
Okay.
God damn it!
Okay, she does a bit of an idea.
And for all those who, don't want to listen to this, or want to be warned, or whatever... there's this explicit thing that you have to put up, which I did, like, a couple of days ago. So we just want to warn everyone who's listening to this.
We're explicit.
We're exclusively explicit.
Absolutely.
Can you say that 5 times in a row? Exclusively explicit, exclusively explicit, exclusively explicit, exclusively explicit, exclusively explicit.
Well, she can.
It doesn't even make any sense, does it?
No, but, yeah.
Okay, sweet.
Yeah.
So, we're going to give you a little overview of what we're going to do today. We've seen Little Miss Sunshine
and Children of Men.
Yeah, like with the intro and all, that was from Children of Men. So we're not going to start with a pessimistic, depressing movie.
No, we're going to start with Little Miss Sunshine, aren't we?
Which is a comedy, even though there's drama in it.
Yeah, starring Toni Collette.
And... Rob Altman? No, Steve Carell. My favorite. Well, he was sort of my favorite. Who was playing the grandpa?
Rob Altman, wasn't it?
Was it?
I don't know, we gotta check.
Oh my god,
we're really bad. Alan Arkin
was the grandpa.
See?
Yeah.
And, what's it about, Kat?
Well, basically, it's about this girl who has, been chosen to be in the Little Miss Sunshine Beauty Queen pageant.
Yeah. Well, so we have to say that for everyone who's not seen the trailer, that she's not a beautiful girl. She's the antithesis of the pageant girl.
Yeah, absolutely. She's just a plain young... She's very pretty.
She's very pretty.
Not your stereotypical beauty pageant girl.
She just has normal hair, she wears gigantic glasses, and she's just, usually you would say, not well-groomed, but she's like, 8 years old or whatever?
Yeah, she's 8 years old, and she comes from just an average family, you know?
Well, I wouldn't even say that they're average, they were like really poor.
Yeah,
did you see when they were setting up dinner?
Yeah.
The dinner table?
Yeah.
I mean, they were drinking out of plastic cups and jars that they had bought food in, and they just rinsed it and used it as a glass.
Yeah, well, you know, their father was like this loser.
Even though he preaches, winning is everything.
Yeah,
Loser
who was going around doing seminars about, you know, the 9 steps and how they will improve your life if you follow these 9 steps. And,
yeah, that was
you know,
funny.
The wife is working her ass off night, like, all the time.
What was she working?
I don't know where she was working, but I just know she was working.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and then you've got the grandfather who's this pot-smoking drug addict.
Oh, he's cocaine-snorting guy.
You know.
And he just got booted out of his retirement home, and he goes like, oh, it was so nice, and it had a pool, and all these old ladies, and I was the most active guy there, you know.
Yeah. And then you've got Toni Collette's brother, who's played by Steve Carell.
Oh, he was great.
Who was, just attempted suicide, you know, failed at it. And he's gay Proustian university scholar who fell in love with one of his students, who ran off with the second world's greatest Proust scholar.
Yeah, he was a really high-profile guy.
Yeah.
He must have been a very successful person, and then he fell in love with one of his students, and that guy broke his heart, and then he wanted to kill himself.
Yeah, yeah. So
that was really sad. I think that was the opening of the movie, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the opening
movie. Yeah, that was really bad. So he's in the hospital, and Toni Collette, his sister, comes in there, and you get the information that he might have been trying this before.
Yeah, that he's tried this before.
And that he stopped. They stopped him again somehow. Mm-hmm. I think he was trying to slit his wrists. He slit his wrist, but
he didn't die. And then there's the son, who's this mute.
Yeah, well, he chose to be mute.
He chose to be mute, so he could be a pilot in the military.
Yeah, what was it like? I'm gonna be not saying a word until my parents, until you guys are gonna let me go to flight school. Something like that.
That, and, you know, it was just discipline himself for flight school.
What was the book he was reading? Was he a Nietzsche scholar?
Yeah, he was a Nietzsche scholar. Was it Nietzsche? He was into Nietzsche.
So he didn't speak a single word until something happens later on.
Yeah, which we don't really want to give away.
But it was... This guy has... Like, he doesn't get to say a lot, and for a lot of actors, that is how they portray emotion through their dialogue. Mm. Otherwise, it's hard for them to find the emotional thing.
He didn't need to. And he had great facial expressions.
Everything was through his facial expressions. Like, the whole movie, it is basically a drama, but the way it is done, it is a comedy.
Mm.
And the way he did all the stuff that he was going through, like, he hated his family, he just hated everyone.
Yeah, and you could so tell that was what he was feeling.
Yeah, he was the perfect loner, and he had these amazing facial expressions that spoke more than 1,000 words.
Mm, absolutely.
He was amazing, eh?
Absolutely. So the cast was just brilliant.
It was perfect casting.
And from beginning till end, the movie was just great.
Like, everyone was totally dysfunctional in there.
Mm.
And the way it was done, like, the first dinner scene, which happens, like, what, 10 minutes into the movie?
Yeah, something like that,
When they find out that, Olive, what's her name?
Yeah, Olive. Olive's a little girl.
When Olive finds out that she, because the actual winner did something.
Yeah, she, it was something about diet pills.
Diet pills, that was it. So she got disqualified, and Olive, who was second, so she made it to the next round, the next pageant, which was in L.A., was it
LA? It was in L.A., so they had to travel from Albuquerque to L.A.
Yeah.
In two days.
Yeah, and since we already said that they're totally poor, so they were thinking, well, they can't send the, 8-year-old kid alone there, so the mother wanted to go as well. They couldn't afford the plane tickets, so they had to drive, but somehow the mother can't drive or something
couldn't drive manual.
Couldn't drive manual. So basically it comes down to the whole family has to pack into this old VW van and drive from Albuquerque, New Mexico, to LA, California, which is like, what, several days, like 2-day drive or something?
I have no idea. I don't know my United States geography.
Well, it's by a lot. Quite a drive. And, of course, a lot of stuff happens while they're on the road trip.
And the
funniest thing is actually the car itself. Like, you have these dysfunctional characters and they're in this confined space.
Even the car is dysfunctional.
Yeah, and the car just goes like, hey, you guys are all dysfunctional, I'm going to be dysfunctional as well. So all of a sudden something happens to the car and then they can't start up the car anymore. So they have to push it until they have enough speed or whatever so they can drive from the second gear on or something.
Yeah. So it's really funny watching about six of them pushing this, VB. Yeah.
Brett Kinnear's driving, everyone else is pushing, and then they have the certain order in which the people are going to jump into the van, starting with little Olive, and I think the brother is the last one.
Yeah, the brother's the last
and
one.
And they do that several times in the film, and it's hilarious.
It's so funny.
It is so funny. Amazingly funny. And to top it all off later on, like, you see it in the trailer, all of a sudden the honk starts blaring on its own.
Yeah, and so they're driving through LA with going,
and everyone was like, what are you doing? He's like, no, I'm not honking, but someone's honking, I don't know. And then the cops start showing up and going, hey, go over there. And it's like, oh my god, yeah, right. Something happens to the grandpa, so they really shouldn't be pulled over by the cop.
Yeah.
And it's just fucking hilarious. This movie is... It has this feel of an independent film. Yeah, I don't know what it was.
It's because of everything was just so natural looking, so drawn back. It was more of like a realistic look at a real family.
That's true.
More than anything. And it wasn't playing to normal Hollywood standards.
No, not at all.
And, you know, even the ending, you could say, wasn't what you were expecting.
Yeah, absolutely. I was quite surprised by that.
Yeah.
Like, you get to the pageant, and like we said, Olive is such a normal, plain girl.
Mm.
I like how they portrayed the pageant. Like, those girls were literally, like, airbrushed to look amazing. They looked like artificial, like Barbie dolls.
Yeah.
It It was horrible.
It was disgusting.
And Abigail, of course, her mom put makeup on her and did something to her hair, and she was pretty.
Yeah, she was pretty.
So beautiful. But compared to the other ones, like, all the other girls looked like they were clones.
Yeah.
And then
she,
there was Abigail.
She was the most pretty of all the girls, Olive.
Yeah.
But in comparison to the others, she was the most prettiest. But because the pageant was all about
artificiality,
you know, superficiality. You know, United States pageants,
yeah,
they're over the top.
Yeah, it was clear that because she's so different, she was not conforming. Mm. So, of course, she wouldn't stand a chance. And then the father and the brother were like, we have to get her out of here. She has to do an act at the end.
Yeah, yeah, we don't want her doing
gonna,
the act.
She's not going to be able to compete. Everyone's going to laugh at her.
No, she does it anyway.
And we have to save her. And then she does it anyway. And that is one of the biggest twists.
Mm.
She's been doing that routine that we never get to see in the movie
until
at the very end.
She's so
been,
cool.
She's trained doing that with her grandpa. And you expect something really silly, ridiculous. And it is silly and ridiculous, but in such an amazing way. You're just laughing your ass off.
Yeah, it's such a nice way to end the film.
Yeah, it's like people were not laughing at her.
Yeah, it was about setting aside their differences, coming together.
Definitely.
And walking away from this trip as a stronger family.
Yeah, everyone had like their breaking point where they had to go through. Like Steve Carroll's character, he sees the gay student that he fell in love with on the road trip, which is a bit ridiculous, but okay.
Mm.
And then he has to get over that. Everyone has this breaking point and it's at a crossroads. What do you choose to do? The same with the brother.
Mm.
What happens to him? My God, I cried my eyes out. It was so tragic.
Yeah, she cried.
yeah, I cried again. And The same thing for the father. The father is basically the villain in the film, if there is such a thing.
Yeah.
He is such an... Even though he preaches the whole winning concept, he's such a negative person.
Yeah.
Like, they're in this drive... Not driving. In a restaurant while they're on the road trip.
And he's telling his daughter that ice cream will make her fat. And
yeah.
And telling her, you know, that she shouldn't have ice cream because, you know, it'll...
She's going to a beauty pageant
he's going
and
to
stuff.
A yeah, and, like, the rest of his the rest of her family...
They
like
just stare at him going like,
what the fuck are you telling this 8-year-old girl, you know?
Because she had just ordered, pancakes with ice cream or something.
Yeah, pancakes with ice cream, because she wanted to
Yeah, and she goes like, ice cream, ice cream. And then he goes on this rampage about how she's going to be fat, and because she can't compete in beauty pageants when she's fat if she eats ice cream. And then the waitress, she puts the dish down, and the girl goes like, anyone want my ice cream?
Yeah, and everyone digs in, and then she goes, and they're like all trying to encourage her to eat the ice cream.
Yeah, everyone except her dad.
That she's missing out on the ice cream, and then she does eat it, and I think that's a really sweet scene.
Absolutely, because the grandpa and the brother immediately go like, oh, yummy ice cream, man, Olive, you're so missing out, and then the mother chimes in, and the dad just goes and shakes his head, like, you idiot.
It's a nice little comment on how beauty is marketed, that, you know, we need to watch what we eat and diet and all that kind of shit, just so we can look perfect.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, later on, close to the end of the film, she meets this Miss America, whatever she was, and she asks her, do you eat ice cream? And she goes like, of course, I love ice cream, especially whatever, chocolate fudge, whatever it was. And you could see Olive's eyes going like, oh, she eats ice cream, mommy, did you hear she eats ice cream?
Yeah, which is awesome, that's such a cool scene.
Yeah, because it's not, like, you don't have to not eat all the nice stuff that you want to eat, like chocolate and sweets and ice cream and stuff, you just have to measure.
You know.
And it was also a really nice message.
Why deny yourself food?
Yeah, why deny yourself some small pleasures?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, this is, like, I would categorize it as a feel-good movie.
Absolutely.
With all the shit that's happening in it, in the end, even though it's sort of a happy end, but not a Hollywood happy end.
It's just
it has a nice ending.
It's a resolution ending. It's like an ending that just puts a nice framing of the whole film, like nice conclusion to the whole entire piece. It's not a Hollywood ending, it's not an extravagant ending, it's just an ending to a story, and that's what we
And
need.
It's a very well-rounded story.
Absolutely.
It has a nice start, a good middle, a good ending,
mm.
because usually with these movies you have a hard time ended nicely.
Yeah.
Usually it gets a twist at the end, or you have a really like, oh, that's it? You're kidding me. But this one is a very well-rounded film. It has great acting in it.
Great cast.
And it's very funny. Mm. Like, basically, there's not a dull moment in this film.
No, not at all.
How long was it? Like, it 90 like, minutes, yeah, 100 not, minutes, something like that?
Yeah, it was like less than 2 hours.
Yeah, and it's just one of those little gems that you might have missed. You don't have to see it on a big screen. But definitely get it on DVD.
Absolutely, you have to see
it. I highly recommend this. It is amazing.
Who directed it?
It was, I think it had two directors, didn't it?
Directed by Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris.
Yeah, I think they did an MTV sketch or something.
Yeah.
So sure. Yeah, that was their first feature. Someone else wrote it though. It was from a really good writer. Michael Arndt.
Mm.
Don't ask me what else he's done, but apparently he's a really good writer. Little Miss Sunshine was amazing. The characters had depth. Like, within the first 10 minutes of the film, you immediately know these characters are well fleshed out.
Yeah, and there was a lot of characters, and they each had different backgrounds. They had different... They weren't flat characters.
Exactly. It was just... It's one of those amazing films that you have to see. Mm. And I really can't understand anyone who sees this and doesn't like it.
Mm, definitely.
So... Check it out.
Check it out.
At the movies, on DVD, I don't care. It's on my must-own on DVD list, so
and it says soundtrack. Go. Soundtrack was cool.
The soundtrack was amazing, yeah. It was great. And I want to have one of those VW buses now. They go like, meek, 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 meek. And you just go, oh, shut me up. It was great.
All right.
And from comedy... We're going to depressing, futuristic,
dystopian society. Vision.
Yes.
All about the mayhem and the chaos that is Children of Men.
Exactly. Which is an interesting movie. Like, we've been dying to see this for quite a while.
We fell in love with the trailer.
Yeah, we've seen the trailer. God. It stars Clive Owen and Julianne Moore and Michael Caine.
Mm.
And as usual, Michael Caine is just amazing.
Oh, he's so funny.
He steals the show in every single scene he's in.
He plays Jasper.
He plays Jasper, who's sort of a
political cartoonist.
He was, yeah. Like,
he's a political cartoonist from like the 90s and early 20th century.
Yeah, exactly.
We did a lot of commentary on, you know, the Bush and Iraq wars.
Yeah,
and
so we like him.
Yeah, so you can see all his illustrations, and there's all this purposefully placed anti-America, anti-war stuff all over his place.
Well, that starts a whole political debate.
Yeah, well, we won't go into that.
I would not say anti-America.
No, it was more anti...
It's anti-war, anti-Bush, and right. I'm so for that.
Yeah.
So, that's all good.
There was a few anti-American.
Yeah, it's one of those films that, like, the set design, the whole production design is amazing. Oh, cinematography, so much detail. Was just awesome. There's a scene where, there's a lot, like, we haven't even said what the movie's about, but anyway, there's a scene where the whole room is plastered with, newspaper pages, and they did all of these for the movie. And if you like, there are a couple of them in the trailer, and we freeze framed it. The stuff that you can read there, it is amazing.
Like what was one of them? Like, they should remove Charles from the throne.
Charles shouldn't get the throne. And there was something about an atomic detonation
in Kazakhstan.
Yeah, Kazakhstan, I think, was totally annihilated or something.
And fertility tests failing. And
so this movie has a depth of detail that I've hardly ever seen before.
Yeah, no, everything was just so...
It reminds me of 12 Monkeys, just because we've recently watched 12 Monkeys.
Mm. Everything was just so perfectly placed. And we should actually tell them that film.
Exactly. So what Children of Men is about, for people who have not seen the trailer, it's like in 2009, I think...
No, it's a bit more than that. It's 2020-something.
No, in 2009, they somehow discovered... The last person was born in 2009.
Yeah.
And they discovered that somehow women are infertile all of a sudden.
Yeah, they can't... They can't have babies anymore. Yeah.
Basically, the whole tagline of the film is that in one generation or in two generations, humankind is gone.
Yeah, we'll all be extinct.
Because we can't procreate.
Mm. And so the beginning of the film starts, and this is how we started our podcast, was that the last child born...
The youngest person on the planet,
who is 18 years old,
And the died. Funny thing is they say... 18, like, don't quote me on this, but it's 18 years, what, 5 months, 6 days? Yeah,
they quote the entire time.
5 hours, 20 minutes, and 32 seconds or something like that. So they were really monitoring that.
Yeah, he was a real celebrity, and everyone knew him, and everyone was monitoring him, and he died. And at
he
8.
He got stabbed because he wouldn't sign an autograph.
Yeah, absolutely, which is really stupid. Yeah.
Like, he was the celebrity because he was the youngest person on the planet. Just, it's funny, like, the people that we have celebrities of nowadays, and how that changes when society changes.
Yeah, absolutely.
He was the number one celebrity.
Yeah, and then they immediately knew straight after he was killed that who the next youngest person was, who was a girl who was
18 maybe, years and 6 months or something.
Yeah, it was like a month younger. A month older or something like that.
No, she has to be younger. So it was 4 months or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, I think she was just younger by a couple of days, actually.
Yeah.
But whatever. So, well, I remember this is how the movie started out. It has sort of... Well, a slow start is not the right thing to say, but somehow it doesn't really pick up its pace until like 20 minutes or something. And I was joking around and saying, like, well, I know who killed him. It was the one who's next in line for being the most popular celebrity.
Yeah.
But like, coming back to the whole amount of detail, you see those vids in the background. Like, it's basically... like, what, 1984, where they have these huge vid screens that are broadcasting 24/7, and like every 5 seconds there's a flash of going like, missing your fertility test is a crime or something like that.
They had so many different
and the one, the world has collapsed, only Britain soldiers on. it gives you this idea that the rest of the world basically is in anarchy and chaos, and only Britain has a civilized society.
Yeah. Which is very, very much like, you know, V for Vendetta and stuff like that.
Yes, it reminded me a lot of that.
Where, you know, Britain is once again the power in the world.
The ultimate, yeah. Even though, the funny thing is that when they brought that up, I wasn't so sure whether that was actually correct or whether that was just government propaganda
to me it felt a lot like propaganda, because Britain was obviously in anarchy. You have all these different political factions fighting wars against each other. You've got all the refugee problem that's going on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, was really bad.
You don't really find out about the rest of the world, except that everyone's trying to get out.
Well, not everyone, but that sounds a bit weird, but everyone not of the white color is trying to come into Britain, and those are the ones that get deported.
Yeah, they're immediately shift off to the refugee camps.
Yeah, well, they're actually really hunted down. That's really bad. Like, later on in the film you see certain parallels to the World Third Reich. Basically, Britain was a war zone. Like, it continues war, and you don't even know between who, actually. It's like, it's a government against terrorists, and you're not sure whether the government's actually right or wrong.
But you didn't really see much of the military. You saw a lot of the political factions, you saw the military here and there, but you saw more of these security guards that dressed in black, which was more like the SS, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely.
There was more parallels to that, but, and you've got them, like, all rounding up refugees into cages.
But see, I thought that they were the military.
Yeah.
Do you think they were the cops?
No, they were something else, or Homeland Security.
Oh, yeah, true. Yeah, one time you actually get to see that, like, when they're herding out those black folks, you actually see the plague thing saying Homeland Security. So, that's definitely giving you a hint.
But they had, like, all this other stuff, like, you know, just little things in the background that, you know, unless you're really, really watching and paying attention, you would never really pick up. Like, there was this one ad that was playing on all the television screens every now and then.
Oh, the quietus.
As Clive Owen was going through, you know, the city, and it was this thing for quietus, where it basically has this wonderful, like, serene kind of, like, dental commercial, you know, with the perfect person.
Yeah.
They've got the glass and their fake smile, and they put two tablets inside the glass, and they take a drink of whatever they're drinking, and it comes up going, you know, to die peacefully or something like that.
See?
For quietus. And quietus is basically self-euthanasia via, you know, drinking this liquid. And then in every single scene that Michael Caine and his wife are in, the quietus box, which is this fluorescent blue, it's almost sky blue, and in comparison to the rest of the scene, it just stands out.
Yeah, everything's greyish, or hardly has any color.
Desaturated.
And there's this nicely blue box.
Quietus.
Like, the only thing to make it more obvious was, like, let's shine a spotlight on it.
Yeah, and that's in every single scene, purposefully placed, you know, so you know that that's something that they're thinking about doing.
Well, you know, there's this saying, like, if you want to use the gun in Act 3, introduce it in Act 1.
Absolutely.
So they introduced the quietest box, which I actually didn't consciously pick up on until, like, the second act or something. Yeah. And I was like, oh, shit, he has one of those boxes.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, while you were telling about the ad, I didn't see that ad at all. You were telling about the glass and the pills, and I was like, what the hell? What movie are you talking about? I didn't get that at all. What scene was it in? Was it like Clive Owen was naked and I was a bit distracted?
No, he was walking through the street. It was just before he got kidnapped by his wife, his ex-wife.
Well, assuming they were married. Well, were they married?
Yeah, I presume they were married.
So, like, the overall story of the film is basically, like, the world is infertile, like, humans are infertile, and there's this one woman that the terrorist group Fishes found, and she's pregnant.
Yeah, she's pregnant.
And she's, like, what, 18 or 20 years old, and she goes, like, I didn't even know what pregnancy is, goddammit.
Yeah, and she doesn't know who the father is.
Yeah, which I think also started up interesting details, like, when she was telling about she doesn't know who the father is because people are sleeping around and they don't really care about stuff anymore because first off they're like the last generation. That's also why the whole world, like, there's waste in all of the streets. The whole world is just devolving. Everyone knows, like, in 50 years or something we're all gonna be gone, so no one gives a shit anymore. And so it was interesting when she was talking about these things. I was like, well, no one, of course, thinks about protection anymore.
No, why?
Because why? Like, we're infertile anyway. Mm. And then all of a sudden she was pregnant and she didn't know how to react to it because she was born after.
Yeah, she was born after the fertility, so she has no idea what pregnancy is.
So, yeah, she doesn't even know what the hell is going on. And also with, like, these little details, you see animals, like little kittens and puppy dogs.
And cows.
They were really cute. And after a while, I was like, man, those animals are getting on my nerves. This is like, until something in my brain finally clicked. And I was like, oh, yeah, thank you, I get it. Yes. The animals can procreate, we can't.
Yes, the animals were still able to produce offspring.
Yeah, so basically it was not like a biological virus or something that got everything living on the planet. It was just us.
It was just us.
Something happened to us. Yeah. See, don't do drugs. I don't know whether
genetic testing is wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. So yeah, I thought that was an interesting detail that I just subconsciously picked up on. We were watching this movie with a couple of our friends and we had dinner with them afterwards and we were talking a little bit about it, and one of our friends, we were talking about the kittens and the puppies and he didn't even pick up on that. That meant that they could still procreate.
But see, that's the thing, there's so many little details. But they even go further and they go into like the whole psychological element of what the world is like without the sound of children. They've got,
oh my god, yeah, true.
Key, is it Key?
Key. Well, it was an African American lady.
Key.
She was she's the one who's pregnant.
Yeah, and she's accompanied by this former nurse who was in the maternity ward at a hospital. And this nurse was there when, you know, women started losing their ability to produce offspring, and she witnessed that decline in children. They get to this part in the story where they're at a school, and she talks about that, and she talks about how strange and how weird the world sounds without the sound of children. It's an interesting concept because we hear children all the time.
Yeah, actually people are annoyed with, shut the fuck up!
We always hear them. Doesn't matter where you are, you can always hear children, unless of course you're in the middle of nowhere and there's no children around.
Yeah.
But it's amazing how much that lack of sound,
like children's laughter children playing and stuff.
Yeah, which always is accompanied with ideas of hope.
Because they're the future.
They're going to carry us on. But if you can't hear that anymore, what would that be like? And yeah. It's very interesting that they went into that, and I'm glad they did.
Yeah, absolutely. That's also the whole, like, we don't really have any outlook on the future, because it's going to be over. Mm. It's going to be gone when we're gone. Mm.
What's the point?
Because, yeah, that's basically what defines us. Like, we always live for tomorrow. Mm. It's like we save for our vacation in 6 months.
Yeah, or
and
we save
stuff
for
like
our,
that.
We save for our future children or our future grandchildren.
Exactly.
Or our
nieces and nephews. We're trying to improve and all stuff like that. Mm. And all of a sudden that is taken away from us. So all the drive that's behind us is gone.
Mm. Yeah, and we're just basically left living this
like
mundane
a vegetable,
existence.
Basically.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Going like, oh yeah, I'm just walking around, I'm going to work, I'm going home, I'm
we're living,
going to work,
we're living
because
we have to. And
yeah, it's very depressing when you think about it.
Yeah.
And I think that the world, how they've shown it, how it looks, really reflects that very,
absolutely,
very well. It looks like the worst slum or war zone that you've ever seen in a movie, on television, on the news, or anywhere.
Mm.
It was really horrible.
Mm. Absolutely. And it got worse and worse.
Yeah, exactly. There's this bleak existence for people. And all of a sudden, there's this shimmer of hope that's just thrust into the middle of this guy's existence. What was Clive Owen's name anyway? Theo!
Theo.
Oh, he sounds like a monk.
Yeah.
Theo! Well, anyway, he gets kidnapped by some terrorists,
yeah,
which later turns out to be led by his ex-wife, or
Julian
play, Moore.
Played by Julian Moore.
Yeah, that was funny. Her name's Julian. She's played by Julian Moore. Yeah, and she's like head of the Fishes, which is a terrorist organization.
Yep, yep.
And well, she's trying to get key to the Human Project.
The Human Project, which is a boat that's floating around the world that's working towards well, apparently it's a myth. It's kind of like a thing that's been told in stories, but no one has actually had any evidence that it exists.
Yeah.
And they just know that it's like a boat in the middle of the ocean with scientists dedicated to solving the infertility of humans.
Did they know it was a boat in the beginning?
Yeah, they knew it was a boat.
It was said it was a boat.
Yeah, it was a
boat.
Oh,
okay.
And so Julianne Moore's character, Julian, is trying to get key to this boat, and they need Theo to help them set that up.
Yeah, Britain is a totalitarian state.
Yeah.
So they need travel papers.
They need transfer papers, because Key is obviously a refugee.
Yeah.
So, you know, they don't want her ending up in the refugee camps, because
yeah,
then she'd be killed or
yeah, hell
whatever.
Knows what would happen
yeah,
to her.
Absolutely.
She just wouldn't get to the Human Project.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just of all the difficulties that can happen in this scenario, of course she had to be African-American, or, well, black, because she's not African-American, it's in Britain.
Yeah.
What do you say, politically correct?
I'm sure.
I well, if I say black, I don't mean it in derogatory sense. So, well, all this shit basically is happening.
Mm.
Like, he gets, without wanting to, he gets thrust in the middle of it. And even in the terrorist group, there are certain factions,
yeah,
and there's power play,
yeah,
and all kinds of shit. So we don't want to give it away. A lot of shit happens, and he's in the middle of it. And then he finally finds out. Like, at first, he doesn't even know that she's pregnant.
No.
I wonder how they sort of hit her belly, because it was a huge belly.
Oh, well, you know, she was wearing very, very
yeah, but
loose
still. Yeah, anyway, so he finds out that she's pregnant, and then he realizes that...
Yeah, well, actually, come to think of it, he wouldn't even think, wouldn't be the first
yeah,
thing
exactly.
He wouldn't think about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he would go like, man, she's fat.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
true.
Or she's got a belly on her.
Yeah, because it's like almost
pregnant.
20 years later, so people are used to not having pregnant women.
Yeah, and not seeing it. So
yeah,
he just wouldn't have thought about it.
Exactly. So he finally goes like, okay, I will get you there.
Mm.
And that's how all of the stuff just happens. Like, the police are after them because she's black,
yeah,
and she's supposed to be deported.
Yeah.
And then other like a couple of factions are after him. So he goes to his only friend that he has, which is Jasper, who's played by Michael Caine.
Mm-hmm. He rocks.
And oh, he's just every single thing.
pull my finger.
Yeah, he had this. His character had this routine. Come on, pull my finger.
Where, of course, you know, if you know the joke, you pull the finger and he farts.
Yeah,
he goes, oh, no, no, I'll do it myself.
Yeah, he's just he's really funny, and he looks like a hippie. He has this long white hair,
yeah,
and it's just it's hard to describe. He's just amazing.
He's the comic relief of the film,
yeah,
which I think is really needed, and it's because
yeah,
it's such a depressing
film. A very depressing film, especially when you let it get to you.
Yeah,
when you think about what's actually happening, about what the society means and stuff.
Yeah.
But actually, speaking of that, there were a couple of things that were a bit weird. Like, they didn't really fill in the background of what how it had happened and how it had affected everyone. What's happening to the rest of the world because we just get to see Britain.
Yeah.
So that's what we were saying. Like, it might be propaganda. Because you never get to see what actually is with the rest of the world. It might be like 28 days later, where the rest of the world is fine.
Yeah, it's just England.
And they just have to keep telling their population.
But I think from the book, and I'm not sure, P.D. James, the crime novelist who, like, Skull Beneath the Skin, wrote the original book for Children of Men. So it'd be interesting to read that book in its entirety to see if there's more detail in the book than there is in the film, because there was a few things that were missing.
Yeah, and well,
it was all very ambiguous, which I think I like that though.
Yeah, definitely. I prefer that actually because it leaves it open to interpretation.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't give you a fixed background, but some people might go like, "There's lack of that."
Yeah.
And the only other thing that I had a problem with, which was not part of the propaganda, it was part of actual happenings in the film, is that when basically the shit hits the fan at the end. It is an Islamic terrorist group that starts the all-out war.
Yeah, yeah. Even though there's all these different religions inside the refugee camp, because you do eventually go to the refugee camp, and you do see all these different religions and all these different races and all these different people, but the prominent group is Islam and Muslim, which, okay, sure, why not, but it would have been nice if it was a little bit more balanced.
Yeah, even though, I actually have to admit I didn't pick up on the majority of Muslims.
No, it was more Islam, wasn't it? Was it Islam?
Well, Muslims believe in Islam.
No,
I thought. But anyway, yeah. But it was they were chanting in Arabic. I think I don't speak the language. It sounded like Arabic.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a bit of a narrow-minded view that it has to be those guys who start the final conflict.
I don't think they started it though.
Well, they had they were so were they mourning someone?
Yeah, they were mourning someone because someone got shot that they were protesting against the fact.
Yeah, so
that
they were basically being on a protest run or whatever. But they were armed. And then, of course, the police is trying to break it up, and that's how the whole conflict started.
Yeah, and it didn't help when all these other political factions started invading the refugee camp, including the Fijis.
Yeah, well.
And there was just an all-out war.
Yeah, well, at the very end, it's really like the shit hits the fan.
Yeah, absolutely. Best shots is in the end.
Yeah, it's like at the end, it sort of turns almost into a war movie. It's like Saving Private Ryan meets Black Hawk Down, and It has this, the camera operator, like, it's the shaky camera thing.
Yeah.
Like, you see the camera operator run and all that stuff, and he's totally in the middle of the action. And then something happens, like, something splatters next to him, and blood hits the lens, like, fake blood, of course, but there's blood on the lens.
And then suddenly
he keeps running, because it's all one shot. It's one shot.
You suddenly realize
there's no cut.
Yeah, suddenly realize that the shot that you've been watching for at least 3 minutes already is just one continuous shot. There's no cuts, and then the blood goes onto the lens, and this shot continues on for another 5-6 minutes, if not longer.
Exactly. And they're just like running through the debris field. They're running upstairs in a house.
There's people being shot left, right, and center. There's bombs exploding.
It's all so well timed. Mm. This is meticulous choreography. Mm. It is just amazing.
Yeah.
As soon as the camera operator runs there, this extra flings himself off the stairs, and this one gets shot out the window.
And you got this tank coming around the corner, and you got these people dying left for
it. It is just amazing. Like, I really didn't pick up on the whole, oh my god, it's a continuous take, until the blood hits the lens, and you go like, man, there's blood on the lens, damn it, there's still blood on the lens, my god.
Well, this is a long shot.
We're still in the same shot. And this goes forever. Mm. And then all of a sudden the blood is gone, even though you don't see a cut, which is amazing cutting.
Yeah, yeah. It's just one continuous shot. But
because you wouldn't realize it if there wasn't the blood on the lens.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you go like, hey, the blood's gone.
Yeah, and then you go, oh, okay, that was a cut, but you it's didn't still a continuous it. Yeah. shot.
And it is just, the staging of it all is just fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And in the midst of all of this, of course, the baby gets born.
Yeah.
Of course, like, we're in the middle of the fucking war zone. Let's let's get this baby in here.
Of course, you know, you've got the whole plane paradigm where, you know, there has to be a baby born on every disaster flight.
Yeah, it was really funny. And what I actually didn't realize until after the film is, like, there's all this shit, like, people firing guns and machine guns and bombs and all this shit's going up.
Mm.
And then you hear the baby cry, and I go like, oh yeah, there's always a baby crying in a fucking war zone. You know, I didn't even realize it. And everyone else in the movie is just staring at this little creature that is
because
crying its lungs out.
They've never heard a baby in so long.
They've never heard it, and I didn't even realize it.
Yeah.
I was like, man, this is so lame. Of course a baby has to cry, until I go whack.
But even when everyone's looking at the baby as they're walking through this apartment building that's being bombed and attacked, you know, they're all looking and trying to get a glimpse of this crying child that they haven't heard in so many... But then all of a sudden in the background, you can see all these people still being shot in the back of the head. Which I thought was just so cool.
Yeah, because the fight is going on between the guys outside and guys at the windows.
Yeah.
But the guys deeper in the building, they just see the baby. They just can't believe it.
Yeah.
They just go, oh, and someone... I think tries to touch it or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're just like, we're seeing this miracle
walking
among us.
Absolutely.
And they just, Clive Owen and the mother, they just walk back down the stairs that they had just come up. And all of a sudden it changes from the refugees to the soldiers. And they are having the same expressions. Oh my God, there's a crying baby.
Yeah, yeah.
It is such a, like, I cried at this scene as well. Like, it is such an amazing scene. Oh, I'm an emotional person.
I'm cold hearted, bitch.
And they just, you're saying that in the last podcast too. And they're just walking out there. And one of the soldiers actually just goes like, she's firing, she's firing.
Yeah.
And then everyone sees why. And they, like, some of the soldiers kneel and do the cross.
Do the sign of the cross.
Yeah. And it is just amazing. And so Clive Owen and Kate just basically get to walk through this band of soldiers.
Mm.
And they're like almost through. And then some idiot in the apartment building starts firing again, and it's back to zero.
Yeah.
And everyone's just firing again.
Yeah.
It's like, we had this revelation of this child among us, but you firing at me, I'm going to fire at you. So
it was a glimpse of hope.
Yeah, and we just turn into the dumbass idiots that we are.
Yeah.
But that was a really amazing scene.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's not the end of the film. Like, it continues from there on, but we're not going to give that away. And yeah, the funny thing is, actually, we found out that, like, we seen this almost a week ago.
Yeah.
It's not been released in the US.
No, it's not getting released until December.
Yeah, it's really funny because in Australia, we're usually the last ones to get stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now all of a sudden it's been released in Europe.
Yeah.
And in Australasia. But it's a British movie, maybe that's why. And also the content and all of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely a highly recommendable film.
Absolutely.
The cinematography is amazing.
Mm. Camera movements are great.
Yeah, like, there's another amazing camera movement when they have the car chase.
Yeah, there's a car chase in the film, which we won't go into detail.
Yeah, because something major happens there. But I think they had to, like, do a special rig or something. Because at first, you have the feeling the camera operator was in the car.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden, he's outside the car and it's one take.
Yeah, it's one shot,
It's one shot. And a lot of stuff happens in the damn car chase. I don't know how they pulled it off. But it was really amazing.
Mm.
I absolutely love this film.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was directed by... What's his name?
You don't know? By Cuarón.
Yeah, okay, it was directed by Cuarón. I couldn't think of his first name.
Alfonso?
Alfonso.
Is it Alfonso Cuarón?
Alfonso Cuarón. Who did Prisoner of Azkaban and...
I'm sorry, my Spanish is shit.
I
haven't even seen the film. I wanted to see it, like, ever since it came out. It's out on DVD. You've seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Oh, damn it. Cuarón is doing a really, really good version of Children of Men. I've not read the book.
Yeah, we're going to read the book. Though.
Yes, now we want to read the book. We already checked it out. Dimex, $20 or something. Yeah, shout out to Dimex. Give it to us for free. Yeah, but it's a great movie and has good characters, even though I wouldn't say that they have a lot of depth, other than Jasper.
No, well, the main focus in the story is the world has gone to shit.
Yeah, and you get a lot of detail. when it comes to that. Like, yeah, the production design, I would nominate them for an Oscar. Is there an Oscar for production design?
Yeah, yeah.
Art direction, that's it. Yeah, because the sets, they're so detailed. Oh, and God, you don't even realize that because you just take it for granted.
Yeah.
But it is just amazing.
Well, see, as a set designer myself, I took notice of everything.
Yeah. It was just, it's just wow.
Yeah, it's just amazing.
It gives
stuff,
the movie such a reality.
Yeah.
It was just amazing. So, yeah, I can't say amazing anymore.
Because it's an amazing film.
Exactly. Thank you for saying it.
Amazing, so amazing.
Absolutely terrific. I got a new word. So, yeah, highly recommend it.
Yeah.
Totally different from Little Miss Sunshine, which gives us a really well-balanced podcast, I think.
I think so.
But both of the films were quite surprisingly
awesome,
terrific.
Mm.
I love them,
yeah,
for different reasons, but I think what they both have in common actually is that they're well-rounded.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just wow. The writing and the directing, great.
Mm.
Visually, Children of Men, cinematography, great.
And the ending of Children of Men, ambiguous.
Very ambiguous. A lot of the movie is open to interpretation, which I like. It's one of those. I think maybe the book is like that as well.
Mm.
It's like an Orwell novel.
Yeah.
It just makes you think and it makes you talk about it.
Mm, absolutely.
And I think that is basically the best that you can get out of it. You get entertainment and then you actually get some for the brain as well.
Mm, there's nothing better than dystopian movies.
Yeah, I'd never even heard of that word. So yeah, check out Children of
Absolutely.
Men.
Absolutely.
And especially since it's like coming out around Christmas in the US, go check it out at the movies.
Yes.
You won't
see
be
it
disappointed.
At the cinemas.
Yeah. It might have a slow start, but go with it.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, definitely.
And Michael Caine, do I need to say more?
You rock.
Exactly. We love you, Michael.
So, all right.
Okay, those were our two reviews. What's the time, Kat?
Oh, we have...
Oh my God. We are real long again. Okay, so we have to wrap this up really quickly. Because I had this amazing idea of putting in like a little trailer section. Because recently we've seen
a few really good trailers.
I'm saying amazing again. I don't care.
Wicked trailers.
This
wicked.
Wickedly awesome trailer, which is Frank Miller's 300. And for anyone who's not seen this, like, we're going to put a link on the blogger.
Oh, definitely.
This,
you have to check this trailer
This
out.
Trailer, and I'm not shitting you, I cried while I watched
she
it.
She did. I was there.
I had this tear running down my cheek, and my jaw was on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
This trailer,
it's just stunning. The trailer is stunningly beautiful. The visual effects in it, just from the trailer alone, are just awe-inspiring.
If the movie is just half as good as the trailer, it's going to be one of my all-time favorite movies.
Yeah. The visual style is very, very strong, very, very rich, which you would come to expect from Frank Miller because he did Sin City.
Yeah, but it's very different.
But
it's not black and white.
Very different. Not black and white. It's more like digital. It's more sort of kind of like...
It has a digital retouched feel.
A polished version of, you know, maybe Night Watch. You know, the Russian vampire, Daywalker.
Yeah, Nocturne or something like that. I'm sorry, I don't speak Russian, even though I'm from Europe.
You know, it looked like a very polished version of that. Mixed with a few other things,
yeah.
But more that was what came to mind when I saw the trailer.
Yeah. It takes your breath away.
Mm.
So we're gonna put the link up as soon as the podcast is up. So just check that one out.
Yeah.
Click on it, and if you don't like it after watching this, I don't know you. It's just you know, dude, we're done talking.
Come here, and we'll slap you.
Yeah, basically. Like, oh yeah, and this is actually what I want to ask is, like, if we have any American listeners, because we don't know where our listeners are, we have a couple. I want to know, because at the end of the trailer it says 03, 09, 07, and 07 definitely is 2007. But I think in America you have the month before the day.
Mm.
That means March, which I like.
Yeah.
If you actually have the day and then the month, it means September. So could anyone please clarify this, whether it actually means month, day, year, or day, month, year?
Please.
That'd be awesome. We've seen another trailer that was for Aragorn.
Aragorn, yeah, the dragon film based on the book.
Do not mix this up with Aragorn, the character out of
Lord of the Rings. No, it's
Eragon. And what do we think of this trailer?
Didn't blow my socks off.
I hate that. I don't want anything to blow my socks off.
Well, didn't
No, it's like a mix of Chronicles of Narnia meets Lord of the Rings.
Meets Dragonheart.
And that's just a kids movie. And I don't know, it didn't do anything for me. If there's nothing else coming out, I will see it.
Oh, I'll see it, because John Malkovich is in it.
True, John Malkovich plays the king, and Jeremy Irons is in it.
And Jeremy Irons.
And that's pretty much it. But it looks like Chronicles of Narnia, and I'm not a fan of the Chronicles of Narnia movie.
I've read Aragorn the book, and I liked it, but it wasn't... Like, I could think of about 10 other things I'd rather make into a film, but no, I'll watch it.
Okay, I might watch it. And then the last trailer we saw was Day of the Dead, the remake that comes out next year.
By George Romero.
No, it's not by George Romero. The original is by George Romero. I don't even want to know who's doing the remake, because the trailer is one of the shittiest trailers I've ever seen, and I just hope that this movie is going to be slightly better than the trailer, because otherwise it's going to tank major.
It's going to die in the ass because it's a stupid trailer.
Yeah, this trailer is so shit. I love Romero's, what's the trilogy? Day of the Dead trilogy? Ah, well, the trilogy, you guys know what I'm saying. The zombie trilogy. I love it. And I love Day of the Dead, the original. It's really funny. But this trailer looks like shit, and the zombies look like they're on lightning speed drugs or something. Yeah. I don't care.
Some movies are just not meant to be remade.
Yeah. Especially not that way. So whoever's the director, I hope the movie's better than the trailer. Otherwise, dude, just pack your suitcase, go to Antarctica. Or give me your job.
Give up.
So yeah, that was it. Miller's 300. Awesomely terrific. Absolutely. Aragorn, I'm not so sure. Cat likes it. Day of the Dead, stay away, people. Just stay away. If you want to see a trashy film, just rent a DVD.
Absolutely. You know, Uwe Boll makes some trashy films.
Yeah, but don't rent those DVDs, because that's like stay away, period. It, like, if you touch it, you're going to be electrocuted. Well, unless you like Christina Loken. She was in Blood Rain, but she's not making up for the movie. No. I've seen it. Trust me on this. Don't. Watch it. If you want to see Christina Loken, watch the season 4 of The L Word, which is coming out in January.
Yeah.
She's going to be in it. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to be happy.
Hell yeah.
So, that was the trailer section. And, well, we have a couple of new DVD releases, which is Cars, Call Me Kubrick, The Omen, X-Men 3, The Little Mermaid, and Thank You for Smoking, which just came out in the US, unfortunately. Mm. Well, I've just recently seen Cars because Kat bought the DVD. And I didn't want to see it at the movies, because, like, talking cars, are you shitting me? We watched it. I loved it.
I told her. I kept telling her.
I gotta have it now, too. Yeah, it's great. I love it. And Mater. Hey, see you later, Mater. Later, Mater. Oh, sorry, but I loved it. Well, Color Me Kubrick, we didn't get the DVD, but we watched it at the movies.
Yeah.
Very good movie, starring John Malkovich. John Malkovich. If you've not seen it, go and rent it now. You won't regret it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And The Omen, well, what can I say about the remake of The Omen?
Oh,
it's great.
Awesome.
That's awesome. The one with the impaled priest.
Yes. In the first podcast.
Yeah, right. In the first podcast, we were talking about Mortal Kombat, and we were talking about impalement, and I said, oh, it's like the impaled priest in The Da Vinci Code.
And then later on,
yeah, and later on, I was like, oh, it was The Omen.
Yeah.
Oh, damn it. And you knew, and you didn't correct me in the podcast. You made me look like a dumbass.
Sorry, Mel.
Yeah. And then X-Men 3 came out, which, like, your brother bought it.
Yeah, we haven't gotten around to watching it yet, because we're a bit reluctant to see it.
Yeah, apparently it's a bit different on the DVD.
Oh, really? You? No.
Didn't Michael say that?
No, he said it's better on DVD format. And there's all these, like, 32 deleted scenes.
Yeah, we're going to watch it.
Yeah.
And we're going to give a review, because we've seen it a couple of months ago at the movies.
And we hated it.
And we literally hated it to its core.
We didn't like it at all.
And we are huge X-Men fans.
We love the first two.
So we hated that
one. And the comics. And the television series.
Let's not go in there.
Yeah, okay.
That's going to be a separate podcast. X-Men, the television series! There's actually two. But yeah. The Little Mermaid came out, and you wanted to buy it, you were like, I gotta buy it.
Little Mermaid rocks, right?
Why am I singing? Oh.
Isn't it your favorite movie? Disney film?
I don't have a favorite movie.
No, but your favorite Disney?
Well, but, you know, Starship Troopers is by Disney.
Oh, yeah, true.
Distributed by Disney. It's so cool, Starship Troopers. R-rated movie by Disney. I love it. I own the DVD. I love it.
Starship Troopers.
No, but my favorite Disney has got to be Pirates of the Caribbean.
Okay.
Johnny Depp is just so cool. Jack Sparrow rocks.
But animation.
Well... Oh, The Incredibles and Finding Nemo is Pixar, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay, well then it might be.
Yeah.
And then the last one is Thank You for Smoking, which we sort of talked about a little bit in our first podcast. We love this movie. Yeah. So if you haven't seen it, go check it out. Unfortunately, it's just a US release for now.
Mm.
So if you're living in the US or if you can get a hold of a US DVD, try and get this one. It's really worth it.
Yeah. Check it out.
We have some feedback, actually. Tiffany.
Yeah, from, Tiffany. Hey, Tiff.
Tiff, how you doing? I hope you're feeling better now. She emailed us with a little review of Man of the Year. Anyway, this is the new Robin Williams movie where he's, like, running for presidency. All right, so this is the Man of the Year review by Tiffany. Robin Williams is back. At least he was for a minute. In his latest flick, Man of the Year, Williams started out strong and then fizzled quickly. The jokes were dead on and fall out of your seat funny. However, Barry Levinson, the writer and director of the film, desperate attempt to recreate the conspiracy theory fell drastically short of being appealing. It began with a Jon Stewart-esque character named Tom Dobbs, played by Williams. One of his audience members asks him why he hasn't run for president. On a whim, he decides to go for it. At the same time, a company named Delacroix is perfecting their new paperless ballot technology. That's when all hell breaks loose and the story goes shit. Basically, there's a glitch in the voting system making it impossible to get an accurate count. When a sweet, unassuming Delacroix employee, played by Laura Linney, looking super hot by the way, finds said phenomenon, the meanies in upper management, i.e. Jeff Goldblum, threatens her job. So she takes this information to the only man that she thinks will listen, Tom Dobbs, who by this time has been voted president-elect. The entire time she's trying to tell Dobbs that he's really just a funny man in a great suit, Delacroix is trying to silence her. Blah 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 blah. She literally said that. On the whole, this movie sucked. It was great when it was being funny. But when it opted to masquerade as a political thriller, I had to refrain from vomiting in the aisle. Ew! Thank you for the sound.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I laughed my ass off at more than one of the jokes. That's where my enthusiasm stopped, though. Well, really, I wasn't ready to leave after I'd finished my pretzel, but I'd paid $6.50 for each ticket for a night out with my girl. Okay, thanks for details, Tiff. The acting was only slightly better than satisfactory. The writing was quick and full of wit. But the damn thing kept trying to be something it wasn't. All it needed to do was look in the mirror and accept that it was a political comedy. There's nothing wrong with that. I love satires. There's nothing worse, however, than a satire that doesn't love itself.
Absolutely.
Let us take a moment of silence for Man of the Year. A bright light that was extinguished so early, never fully able to glow to its fullest potential.
Great review, Tiff.
I like the closing words. That sounds so poetic.
Because the trailer rocks.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for sending in the review, Tiff. Highly appreciate it.
Thanks.
We checked out the trailer because she emailed us about she's going to see it.
Yeah.
And the trailer really looks funny nice and awesome and funny nice. What the fuck's funny nice? Well, it looks it looks funny and nice, which is funny nice, damn it. So yeah, we're going to see it, even though apparently it sucks major ass.
Yeah.
And I've read other reviews where they say it sucks. So. Yeah.
Well, you know, we're also seeing a movie that everyone thinks sucks tomorrow.
Oh yeah, so tomorrow's Halloween, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to see The Grudge 2 on Halloween. How cool is that? But then, yeah, I read that the movie sucks major ass too.
Well, yeah.
So yeah, that's going to be a bit weird.
Yeah.
Well, so we're going to see... Like, you can expect this on the next podcast. It's like a review of The Grudge 2.
Absolutely.
And I think the other one should be Saw 3.
Yeah, we should be seeing Saw 3.
Man, that's going to be such a sequel podcast.
We're going to have a horror podcast.
Oh my god, see? If only those movies had come out earlier, we could do Halloween podcast with reviews of The Grudge 2 and Saw 3.
Mm-hmm.
That would rock.
Yeah, because I know Saw 3 is kind of like out in the United States. Been out in the United States for ages now.
Has it?
I think so.
That sucks.
So, you know, we're getting a little bit late, but yeah, it's all good.
On a little news note, I'm listening to a couple of other podcasts, including the Babylon podcast. I'm a huge Babylon 5 fan. How can I not be? Awesome show. So I found out that they're going to shoot new episodes for that. Like 3 episodes that are directly released on DVD, and they're shooting this in Vancouver around November.
Yeah.
So... if we have a listener in Vancouver, try to get some inside scoop and pictures and stuff.
Yeah. News, news, people, news.
Because I want to get
gossip.
Babylon 5 stuff. Gossip. I love Babylon 5. would be really cool. Mm. So yeah, let's go for our overview. Like we've talked about Little Miss Sunshine.
Yeah, talked about Children of Men.
We both love them. Little Miss Sunshine, go see it.
Children of Men, definitely go see it.
So yeah, actually I have a lot of other things here on my list, but we're gonna cut this short. So yeah, we hope you enjoyed this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. We look forward to the fourth one.
If you enjoyed it, you might vote for us on Podcast Alley. Mm-hmm. Or leave a review on iTunes or on Podcast Pickle. The links are on the blogger.
Where we're infecting the web with verbal diarrhea.
I like that. Infecting the web with verbal. That should be a slogan. I love it. We have to put that on somehow.
And I hope you like our new logo, by the way. Too.
Yeah. We finally got a new logo. Mm. Well, a logo.
A logo.
Because it's not like we had an old logo. We just had no logo. So we have a logo. And it's on the blogger. And well, I hope you like it.
Yeah.
So if not,
feedback.
Yeah, just give us feedback what you would want to be on there. Mm. And why can't I talk in that? Yeah. Anyway.
So let us know. Let us know. Drop us feedback. Give us emails. Send us reviews.
Are you gonna knock over the microphone?
No, okay. I'm just using my hands.
Yeah. Again. Man, maybe we should do a vidcast. But yeah, so leave the reviews, because then it's easier for other people to find us.
Absolutely.
And apparently people like to listen to us, because so far we've just gotten positive feedback.
Yeah, yeah, so more positive feedback, people.
So go to the blogger, which is at vd-verbal-diarrhea, with two R's, .blogspot.com, mm-hmm. Which is, Kat?
vd-verbal-diarrhea, with two R's. .blogspot.com.
Exactly, and there you will find the links to the Podcast Alley, iTunes, Podcast Pickle, and our email address, which is Kat?
vd.verbaldiarrhea@gmail.com.
And diarrhea, as always, with two R's.
DIARRHEA.
Okay, that rhymes. Oh, awesome. So yeah, we're gonna sign out, basically. Right. Well, we're gonna put it up soon. Well, I gotta edit the shit out of it. So we're signing off. Right. Happy Halloween, people.
Happy Halloween.
See you next time.
Boys and girls of every age, wouldn't you like to see something strange? Come with us and you will see. This is our town of Halloween. This is Halloween. This is Halloween. Pumpkins scream in the dead of night. This is Halloween. Everybody make a scene. Trick or treat. Tell your neighbors on the diaphragm. It's our town. Everybody's free. This town of Halloween.
I am the one hiding under your bed. Teeth ground sharp and eyes glowing red.
I am the one hiding under your stairs. Like snakes and spiders in my hair.
This is Halloween, this is Halloween, 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 Halloween.